Boston's paranormal with guests from all over the world. Hear great stories and more. Get ready to kick back and watch Joe and Mark ask the tough questions. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Remember, anything is possible. Your show starts now.
Hello, welcome. Mark's not with us, so we have Chris here replacing Mark, and our guest is Barnaby Jones from Wisconsin Taps. How you guys doing tonight?
Living the dream. Thanks for having me. I hope I'm a adequate replacement for Mark. I don't know if I can be, but I'm going to try.
I'm thinking it's going to be better. More fun, maybe.
We'll see. We'll see.
Anyway, so tell us about Wisconsin Taps and what you guys are all about.
Sure. I am the founder of Cryptids Anomalies and the Paranormal Society, or Wisconsin Caps, and we are based out of pretty much the middle of Wisconsin. There's about 10 people on our team, and we go around and investigate everything from paranormal to Bigfoot, UFOs, dogmen, you name it. We'll go around and check it out. And we've recently started more expanding up into Upper Michigan, and we have an episode coming out in January about the Chicago Mothman sightings as well. So we're getting out there.
Really? Chicago Mothman. I heard a lot of those, though, are misidentifications or just people wanting 15 minutes of fame, you know.
Yeah, like I said, we go out and we investigate, like, sightings and stuff, and we started going into the Chicago Mothman stuff thinking, you know, it's just another cryptid. We're going to go out there. We're going to, you know, go investigate the areas where it hangs out and stuff, and it's where it's seen. And this whole thing just turned into a big ball of wax that started, or big ball of twine that started unwinding and all kinds of stuff. And there's so much more to it than just that. So it's been quite the adventure working on that case. So
what made you go investigate that Chicago? Is that because of all the you know, reports? I mean, I've seen a lot of them come up within the last few years from the Chicago area.
Yep. We did. Go ahead.
That what got you into it is all those, you know, that all of a sudden just out of the blue, like, you know, a lot of those sightings just started being reported all of a sudden, you know, they just, you know, it was like probably the most in the last couple of years, it's been there in a decade, you know.
Yeah, it started about, I want to say 2015 or 2017 were the first reports, and it just started snowballing out of there. There's been a lot around the O'Hare Airport, supposedly recently in that. And the more you dig into this, like, I'm sure everyone's aware, like, the Mothman sightings and stuff in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. But the more that I've dug into this, there's other recent sightings down in Texas. And where did I just find, I want to say like North Carolina or something. There was a couple sightings in the last couple of years as well. And I got to dig more into that one. But it could possibly be the same thing as, you know, like Bigfoot is seen all over the United States and all over the world. And each area has its own name for it. And when you start looking at what this thing is and the creatures that are being seen in that, it's not always necessarily the same name, but the description of these creatures is very similar, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Just before the pandemic really hit, there were a lot of sightings around O'Hare. And you know that Homeland Security has the entire area covered under surveillance. So there's definitely video footage out there that the government doesn't want you to get, you know, whatever it is, if it's a hoax or not, it's definitely going to be on video.
That's a good point. You know, especially after 9/11, you know, yeah, they cracked down and really put the security out there, especially at the airport. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, they, I mean, I used to drive cab. I was driving cab right around that time too, shortly after. For a while, and man, they really cracked down on things at Dane County, even with us cab drivers. You know, and that was right there in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Chicago is like twice the size. That O'Hare is twice the size as Dane County.
Oh, easy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got cameras everywhere. They probably got cameras of cars as they're coming in,
mm-hmm.
you know, on those ramps, I would imagine.
Yeah, then all of a sudden, just like that, the sightings stopped. There were no more sightings of Mothman around O'Hare. It was really weird.
Supposedly, they're still being sighted, though. The last ones were in July and August, I think, was the last sightings around that area, so... But those are the last ones that I heard come out from the Chicagoland area. So and then the Texas ones were before all of that. And I, like I said, I haven't looked into the North Carolina one, but I just found out about that as well. So, but
yeah, it's freaky. I mean, you see things. I saw something really strange once, and I don't remember where it was exactly. We were on our way home, and it was one of those big street signs that are over the interstate telling you, or over on the, hanging from the bridges that say, you know, which exit to take for, you know, whatever. But at whatever it was on there was black, and the wingspan of it was a lot bigger than the sign itself. And it was just standing there. And it was like no bird. I've seen the vultures, the turkey vultures. And stuff. You know, I grew up out in the Oregon area and of Wisconsin, and they used to sit on the signpost out there on the old Highway 14 all the time. But this was not that. I don't know what it was, and I wish I would have grabbed a picture. It's like, you know, that shit happens when you don't have a camera ready, you know, and you're going too fast. You know, there was no way to turn around either at that point.
You say Oregon, Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Did you see that there actually was just a recent sighting out of that area, I believe? That's down by my Madison, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's about 7 miles south of Madison. I grew up in the Madison area.
I think that was last November, right? I think it was Thanksgiving night. That there was two girls driving around down there and saw this thing that could have been they described it as like a Sasquatch with wings, kind of.
Really?
And it was standing in a field and flew across their car. And that was one of the only sightings last year of something in Wisconsin. We went down and we checked that out, but didn't really find anything. Even talked to the neighbors down there, but.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't been back to that Oregon area since they closed down the one best pizza restaurant place there ever was. But, you know, there was no reason to go back. I'm not a big fan of Oregon. I'm not a big fan of Madison anymore. Madison's just deteriorated over the years. It's gotten worse and worse and worse. I just don't feel safe in there anymore. Even though our investigation started there. First investigation was Sanatorium Hill,
mm-hmm.
you know, on Northport Drive. Almost had an in to get into that building. I'd love to get into that basement. I've heard a lot of stories about it. So what other cryptids have you investigated?
Well, primarily we've kind of focused on Bigfoot activity throughout the state. We did a lot of research up at the Hayden Adventure in Upper Michigan. Mm-hmm. And that's a private property. In 2012, Craig Salk got a picture of what could be a Bigfoot on his trail camera, sent it into Finding Bigfoot. Finding Bigfoot actually came out and did a whole episode on it.
That's
and
why.
What's that?
I was trying to figure out why I heard that name.
Oh, yeah. And people kept asking Craig about it, you know, to see the picture and the evidence and stuff after it came out. And him and his wife actually opened the property up as the Hayden Adventure. And Craig used to give the tours and everything up there and show you around all the evidence and everything. And he actually passed away this past spring, like thyroid cancer and stuff. But we've been doing a couple tours up there for him, and we investigated the Rhinelander howls in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. We found some Bigfoot evidence up there. We got some three different size tracks that we actually ended up casting up there, and what we believe is actually a handprint as well that was cast on the banks of the Pelican River in Rhinelander.
Wow.
And this year, our investigation for the whole summer has been focused around Mountain, Wisconsin. And that'll be the last episode that comes out for our season this year in December. So we're currently editing through all the evidence right now with that. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of editing to do.
Yeah.
We've got Bray Road. We're working on Bray Road footage.
Hmm?
Bray Road.
We've done Bray Road. We've driven up and down it several times. Our first investigations that my team did as a group was in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And that's right, you know,
yeah, I know where it is.
15, 20 minutes from Bray Road. Yeah. So every time when we'd leave Burlington, we'd head over and check out Bray Road and stuff. Never saw anything. We did a whole episode at Lee Hample's farm, though, his hayfield there. And right. His property backs up right on the back.
I know exactly where his property is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been there twice now. We were there for a regular, you know, during the day investigation and talking to him. I've got probably 8 hours of footage of just Lee talking and telling his story. And then we went back not too long ago. On a Saturday night, we got there between 7 and 8, and we were there until about 3 o'clock in the morning until the fog chased us out. And it came in real thick, real fast, and it was so thick that, you know, we had to pack up all that equipment due to moisture damage. We didn't want to get any damage from the moisture, but as soon as we got that all picked up, it was gone just as quick as it came in. It was like it chased us off the property.
That's kind of the way our investigation ended, too. It wasn't fog. Our whole van that we use for investigations has solar panels on the roof. It has a back battery that runs all of our equipment. If that drains, we also have a spare backup battery as well. And whatever was out there the night that we were there drained all of our equipment in the van.
Wow.
And all of our batteries, we have security cameras on the van. We had them out on the property, aimed out in different areas, and it sucked all the batteries dry.
Yeah, I just had something like that happen to me. You know, I've been a filmmaker for almost 30 years. I make sure my batteries are charged, and we went to investigate a haunted bus Yeah, I know it sounds weird, but man, it's my batteries. We got in there and we were investigating it. And within 5 minutes, my brand new battery was dead. I couldn't understand it. I didn't have an explanation for it. I thought that would never happen to me, but it did. So it's a real thing.
Yeah, like I said, we had solar panels on the roof. The van is parked in the middle of his hayfield. It sat there for hours all day while we were doing our other stuff. There's no reason why those batteries weren't fully charged and, you know, ready to go. And,
yeah. Well, there's a lot more to Lee's property that... Yeah, you know, it's a lot more than the Beast of Bray Road, in my opinion.
Definitely, yep.
You know, we've kind of been calling it ourselves, but somebody else called it that. We weren't the first one, but we kind of called it like the Skinwalker Ranch of Wisconsin.
Yep, that's what our episode's called. Yeah, Wisconsin Skinwalker Ranch, yep. Well,
The night investigation, it was Mark, myself, and we had Dale Kaczmarek up from Illinois with us that day. And he had a really nice thermal camera attached to his tablet. And we had a bipedal figure in the cornfield before the fog rolled in. And we believed that, because Mark was walking out in the middle of the hayfield, you know, walking a straight line, he was way out of voice range at this point. And we lost track of the bipedal figure, and you can hear Dale and I saying, well, we think it followed Mark through the cornfield. You know, Mark's like, gets back, and the first thing he was saying was, something was following me in the cornfield. coincidence? I think not. You know, but what it was, can't tell you. I mean, I know it stood on 2 feet, probably about 6 feet, 7 feet, maybe. You know, that's about it. You know, that's all we know. Mm-hmm. You know, and it disappeared just, and the fog came in a couple hours after that. You know, like, and it's almost like it wanted us off the property and it stopped recording.
Yeah, we didn't get anything on thermal. We heard something, the hayfield, Lee's hayfield was all mowed when we were there. And we heard something moving through the cornfield on the whatever north side of his property, I guess it'd be. But we didn't get anything on thermal and no idea what it was. But it was pretty big moving through. Could have been just a deer, but
I don't know. We got some audio from there too. And I just haven't got it all together yet. There's so much to go through. Place. Mm-hmm. You know, we've also drove, I mean, the first time we did go out there, we drove up and down Bray Road. And I can see how easy somebody could mistake a dog or a coyote or a wolf for something bigger if you're driving out there alone late at night. Pretty dark. Long road.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to find a 7-foot coyote.
No.
No.
But when you're alone, and at night, yeah. Mine can play tricks at you, on you, you know. You know, you got to realize, you know, some lady come out there, you know, and she's driving down the road and she sees this big wolf. She's going to exaggerate eventually and say, this thing was huge. And it stood up on its hind legs and, you know, and it probably just kind of arched up like this from what it was eating and kind of looked at her like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Easy to have those minds play tricks with you, you know. A lot of misidentifications out there. You got to weed some of it out, you know.
But even with that, though, how many wolves do you see out there?
I haven't seen any, but I've heard some. You know.
We've seen coyotes out there.
I see coyotes all the time, all over. Mm-hmm. You know, even when I was living in Madison, I saw them in certain parts of Madison. And just outside in McFarland, they were like all over the place on those country back roads. You know, you'd have to be careful driving at night, especially if there was like a roadkill deer there. You'd find a whole pack of coyotes sitting there fighting over the damn thing in the middle of the street.
Yeah, I live in Neenah, and we had coyotes running down our road out in front of my house here like a couple months ago. So yeah, they're all over the place.
Well, I know I know we hear. My wife just reminded me that we've heard the wolf howls here on our property now. And I live in Watertown.
Okay.
So, but I'm out in the country. I'm kind of like set between Watertown and Zonia. I can't remember the place. One of these little pissant towns. But, you know, they're growing. They opened up the hunting thing again for wolves, or was talking about it here in Wisconsin. I don't approve of that. But that's what they're talking about doing. Mm-hmm. So where have you looked for Bigfoot? Have you been down in that? I heard that there's been a lot of activity right around Palmyra and Eagle in the Kettle Moraine Forest area.
We did spend one day down there. We were actually supposed to go out with Linda Godfrey down there to see where she had her sightings and Jay. But Linda actually got sick that day and she wasn't able to go with us. So we went and hiked for about 7 hours down there and we didn't really find much. But we've been busy up in the northern part of the state and haven't had a chance to get back down there. So, but I find that there's like all my sightings up in northern Wisconsin start around like Lake Tomahawk, and then they go straight down to the mountain area. So all through Rhinelander and Enterprise and that area up there, there's a huge swatch of just all kinds of reports that I've gotten within the last couple of years. And even recent ones as this past September. And we just started looking into, we got 4 new reports in September from the Rhinelander area, and we just started looking into those. So,
haven't looked into it.
I can't remember. Is it Waterford or Watertown that is What About Linda's?
What About Linda?
I can't remember. We actually did a, when you brought that up, I couldn't remember if it was Waterford or Watertown, but we did an investigation there as well. It's a like a bar that was there that's haunted.
Huh.
I want to say that? It's Waterford. That was 2019, I think, that we were there.
Must not have been here. Must have been Waterford or something.
That's up by, it's just north of Burlington.
So Watertown, I'm not sure. As far as I know, Watertown's only got one haunted bar, and it's an Irish bar. It's an Irish pub called the Lion's Den or Lion's Inn or Lion's Pub or something like that. I went there and did some investigation stuff. Lion's Pub, yeah.
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. Well, the building itself has been around a lot longer than the bar. Huh? Oh, okay. My researcher says, what about in Waterford?
Waterford, yeah. That's what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure when you said that I couldn't remember off the top of my head. So, but yeah, we did that one. We didn't really find too much there, but yeah, paranormal, you can't make it do tricks. So, anything, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's gonna, gonna perform on command, that's for sure.
Yep.
So,
we actually, go ahead.
So, besides cryptids, what else do you guys look into?
We do paranormal. We actually just took a report of a goblin walking down the side of a highway. We're going to go check that out.
Really? Where was that?
Mm-hmm. That was in Upper Michigan.
Really?
I cannot remember off the top of my head where it was. It's down the highway from a lighthouse. I know that. But other than that, I mean, that probably doesn't narrow it down in Upper Michigan. But I do have it in our records and stuff. But that was just sighted back, say, 2 months ago, I think. So we actually went and checked out the road, and there's, like, hiking trails in there, and we're going to go check it out deeper. But we haven't got a chance to get back up there. We've been pretty busy. I've been doing paranormal tours of the Gaynor Tavern in Mackville. And we've been doing those all October for the public and stuff. We just did our last one last Sunday. The building is over 150 years old, and it burned twice since it was built. Originally, way back, I want to say it was built in 1877, and it burned in, I think it was 1889. And then it was rebuilt, and it was passed down from generation to generation all the way up until 1993. And the second time it burnt was in 1987, where half of the building actually completely burned down. Oh. And we got called in last year to investigate some of the paranormal activity that was there. And we ended up documenting a few things, and we ended up doing three more investigations on our own. And then we got permission to go in and start offering tours of it as well. So,
where is this at?
It is currently it's Bean Snappers Gentlemen's Club. And so we go in either after it closes or on the weekends when or on Sundays when they're closed, and we do the tours there. But it opened as Bean Snappers in 1993. But prior to that, like I said, it was passed down from generation to generation in the family. There's four recorded deaths in the building that we actually were able to go back and document and everything, as well as some other associated deaths. It sits across the street from a church, and the pastor's house is right next door. So at the time when it first opened, there was a lot of animosity between the city and the church and the strip club, obviously. And it was so popular when it had opened back in the day that the people were parking all up and down the road to get into it. And with all the problems and stuff and the church not being happy with it and everything, there was an incident where a car from Bean Snappers ended up parking in the priest's own driveway next door. And after he dealt with this and, you know, got over, like, get out of my driveway, you know, you can't park here. He went inside, had so much like anxiety and stress and stuff that he had a heart attack and died. So quite a lot going on there. And it sits across the street from a cemetery as well, obviously with the church there. The original person that built it, Michael Gaynor, his first wife and his later second wife, his son and his son's wife, and then their niece and nephew are all buried almost directly across the street from the building. So it's kind of neat that there's so much history with the building and then just right across the street as well.
I mean, it's so. I mean, it's just up to being opened or right across the street from the church. You know, I'm over here in sin, and then you go over there to the church and confess to your minister, you know.
That's why they're not open on Sundays. Yeah, but we've gotten EVPs. The very first time that we got there, there was a male voice down in the basement of the place. There's a woman's voice in the bar area that we've captured. We actually heard a woman's voice, me and two other investigators that were there on, I think it was our third investigation, a video on security cameras of objects just moving on their own. There's a little like whiteout dispenser, you know, like the roll-on kind, and it's sitting in like a pen holder, and it pops out of that, falls on the counter, and then it looks like something grabs it and pulls it onto the floor.
Wow.
And that's kind of cool. So we actually got that on evidence as well. And doors opening and closing on themselves or by themselves, we've captured that. So there's a lot of activity there. We've not had one tour that wasn't at least something happened. So,
you know, but we've had some interesting things happen to us depending on where we've been. We only started back in 2019.
That's when we started as a group. I was doing a paranormal investigation with one of my friends prior to that. But then in 2019, me and my mom actually went up to the Hayden Adventure, and we met Craig, and that kind of snowballed into starting the investigation down in Burlington, Wisconsin. And then I brought in a bunch of other people. And we ended up just kind of snowballing from there, and that's how we got CAPS started. So,
you're a pretty big group, I noticed. I was looking at all your members on your page. It's like, wow, you guys could break up into smaller teams and cover a lot of territory in a short time.
Well, each one of us on the team tries to specialize into certain areas. So we have paranormal, we have an empath, we have a medium. I do cryptozoology. My mom does research. We have a guy that's our skeptic. And each one of us kind of focuses on that area. So when we go out and do these investigations, we can approach it from different angles instead of always looking at it like Bigfoot is always, you know, a big hairy ape. Or it could be, you know, an interdimensional being, or it could be an alien. So with all the different people looking at it from a different angle, you have a lot more opinions when you're out there looking at stuff. So it kind of helps a lot.
I suppose it would. Mm-hmm. You know, but Bigfoot's got quite a few theories to it anyways. I mean, there has been for years, everybody's got their own theory. What Bigfoot is, or could, you know, there hasn't been any proof. You know, pictures, there's been some pretty convincing pictures, you know. I mean, we go all the way back to that Patterson footage. I mean, do you believe that?
I mean, I do, yeah. People
are calling that hoax. And back in the time that Patterson footage was taken, and, you know, I don't believe that they could have hoaxed it. you know, Hollywood didn't even have, I mean, look at the Planet of the Apes movies back then in from the 60s, you know, all those, you could tell that those apes were fake and those were costumes when you were watching that, but you still enjoyed the TV show anyways. It became a classic to the point where they've got remakes, you know. And that Patterson footage, you actually see the muscle movement. That's a pretty damn good costume. Yeah, pretty expensive fake, especially back then.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, I guess. But, you know, I just see a lot of people calling that one a hoax, and I don't buy it. You know, and I believe that's probably the most definite proof that we're probably ever going to get in our lifetime that it exists. You know, I think they're too smart. If they're an ape or related to the ape or related to us or something along that lines, I think they're too smart and they've been able to stay hidden for so long that they'll be able to continue to do so. You know, there's going to be places we can't get to this day. I don't think we're going to get to in the future too quickly. You know, and if they're interdimensional, well, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, good luck capturing any type of DNA evidence then. You know, then your chances have just gone out the window.
Well, there actually is a lot of evidence that, you know, can be documented and for DNA and stuff like that. Jeff Meldrum and Doug Hychek is actually working on a Sasquatch Legend Meets Science 2, and it's a huge documentary that will be coming out. It's like 2 hours long, and he's looking at DNA and the oil from their hands and face prints that they leave on glass and structures, and he's actually having that DNA sequenced and collecting that. I can never remember what the stuff is called, the Elva Matrix or something like that. But he's been gathering that for a couple of years now, and he's got a Kickstarter going for the funding and stuff. But he did the original Sasquatch Legend Meets Science book with Meldrum, and then the documentary back a couple of years ago. And if anybody has any doubt in the Patterson-Gimlin film, I highly suggest looking at that book, because Meldrum goes into every detail that you could possibly think of the anatomy, the foot morphology, the you know, the muscle structure and everything of the Patterson-Gimlin of Patty in the film. And I mean, there's, you know, anybody's entitled to their opinion, but that's a lot of hard evidence in that book that says that it's not just a costume. So,
well, that's the only way they could have hoaxed it was a costume. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like today where you get back then that they had all the easy, computers available to everybody in their home, and, you know, all the editing software we have today and photoshopping things and stuff like that. You know, today you got to second guess everything, then you see it come out. It's, you know, people can photoshop things to make them look so real. It's unbelievable. Yeah. But something that old, yeah, I highly doubt. Chances pretty slim. But do you believe those stories now that people are telling that have come out more often that I've seen recently where they're being attacked by Bigfoot?
It depends on where they're coming from. I mean, if you go out in the woods and, you know, you're just out hiking or something, I don't see, based on the reports and the evidence and stuff that we've got for Bigfoot, I don't see anybody just getting attacked. It's more like the hunters that are out there that maybe get scared or something and shoot them. You get a lot of those where if the witness says that they went out there and shot them, then the Bigfoot will come and attack them. Or, you know, these people that have them like on their property and stuff, if they threaten them in any way, then it seems like they're more into retaliation.
Well, that would be like self-defense.
Right, yeah. And you can look at it both ways. I mean, if you have a person that's out there hunting and sees one of these things, you don't know what it's going to do. You know, if you, you're just walking along and you don't believe in this thing for one, and now all of a sudden you come face to face with something that you don't know what is, you don't, you know, it doesn't exist. You don't know what it's going to do because you haven't looked into it. You haven't researched it. You don't know, you know, that it's just there to eat berries and move along with its day. And you pull out your gun. Now you're threatening it. So obviously it's going to get aggressive because if these things are half as smart as the, what, you know, we think they are, they know what a gun is. They know what it's going to do. And now you're pointing this thing at them, you know, that's where you get the aggression out of these things, you know? And a lot of that even too is more regional. You get a lot of the attacks and the aggression out of like Oklahoma and Texas area and that part of the United States, whereas like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, you don't hear, you know, a lot of that. And even in the, you know, the Washington and stuff, you don't have a lot of the reports of that, the people that do see them in that.
Well, you know, I would also believe that some of those people would mistake, you know, you walk into their territory and they throw a rock or a branch at you saying that's attacking me, you know. No, that's just chasing you out of their territory. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you coming onto private property and the guy coming out and saying, hey, get the hell out of here, man. You're on private property. You know, that's exactly what they're trying to do.
We've actually come in between what we believe is a male and a female, or a female and an infant. And mm-hmm. we had a huge branch ripped off a tree on the other side of this marsh because we were on the side with the female, is what we believe. And right. So this thing's getting aggressive over on the other side because, you know, we're getting too close to its family and stuff too. So, right. I mean, if it's an animal, if it's a person, if it's whatever it is, it's still going to have that protective nature of, you know, trying to take care of its own. So,
well, it's like if you run across a bear cub and mama's finds you too close to that cub, you better watch out. You know, you're in trouble. You know, they're going to attack. But I just think some of those people that are saying it, that maybe Bigfoot's attacking them, I think some of them are just, you know, mistaking them trying to chase you out of their territory because you're getting too close. You know, maybe they've got an infant or you know, something close by that they're protecting. You know, they're going to do it. You know, I mean, and I don't think they're naturally aggressive. You know, would be my point. You know, I think most of the encounters they're sitting there and the guy's like, oh, it sat there and stared at me for about a, you know, 3-4 minutes and then it just walked away. You know, that's the most common reports. You know, they're standing there watching you.
Yeah. And then you got to wonder how trustworthy people actually are too, you know, because they say, oh, I was just, you know, walking through the woods minding my own business and this thing attacked me.
That's
were
that's
you?
Why you would know? It? Yeah, exactly. I don't think so.
What were you doing in the woods when it attacked you? You know, were you minding your own business or were you, you know, doing something you weren't supposed to be or something? A lot of it too is I find an interesting correlation between people who are out camping and they have like a fire and they'll come to the fire. And we've seen a lot of interactions like that where there's, you know, people having a fire and there's the campfire's going and then all of a sudden people are like throwing stones. Or not people, but the Bigfoot's throwing stones at the campfire. So that's also an interesting thing that we've actually tried that to that's see if we could lure him in with fire.
Power. He lost power. Chris did.
I noticed he disappeared there.
Yeah, he lost power. It's all right, show must go on. So what's the most interesting place you've ever investigated? In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. Let's stay right here at home.
Well, I don't know.
Yes, sir.
I don't know. Interesting. I guess the most activity I've had for Bigfoot.
Oh, interesting, the most. Well, not just Bigfoot, but, you know, like a haunting right. or a building, you know, something that's got probably something, you know, like most activity or some one of your favorite places that you've been to here in Wisconsin to investigate.
right. Well, I guess we just had an episode come out of one of our team members' houses. Barbara and Rick, they live in Upper Michigan, and they have a really old house. It's over 100 years old, and they've been touched in the house. They've had things go disappeared and missing. They had an entire like coffee mug full of hot chocolate, and they had two of them, and they left the room, came back, and one of them just completely disappeared. And we've investigated this house now twice. We were supposed to go back again and do a live investigation, but we haven't set that up yet. But it's completely mind-boggling what's going on in this house, because we came in there thinking that it was going to be paranormal, and it took a weird twist, and it ended up like kind of being more like elementals. Like the Fey realm and stuff like that of whatever was in there is it even said that it was an elemental, whatever we were talking to. We had an ovilus, and it's like a spirit box that, you know, talks. Yeah. Well, for anybody that doesn't, you know, and, we asked it what it was, and it came up elemental. And I said, well, what's that? And it goes, myself. And so we started going along that realm. We had a REM pod that was sitting downstairs on their dining room table, and we were all upstairs. The REM pod started going off, so we went down back to the first floor of the house, and we're looking at this REM pod. We put an EMF meter next to it. The EMF meter spikes too and then goes down. We took the EMF meter and we dropped it below the table. The EMF meter goes down. Like the EMF rating goes down. Above the table, it goes down. Towards the edge of the table, it goes down. There was something in the middle of the table, like this ball of energy, that was setting off the EMF meters. It would answer questions, spike the meter to answer questions. It would set off the REM pod. And the REM pod and the EMF are completely different things. Mm-hmm. EMF is energy, and the REM pod is actual physical proximity to the antenna. Yeah, so you have these two totally different meters going off, and we went in the basement. We tried to find any like electrical spikes down there underneath this table. Nothing. Rick's wedding ring disappeared. About a month ago, Barbara's wedding ring disappeared. She had a cell phone that got taken out of its case, the battery taken apart, and left in a pile on the bed. Just weird stuff. And we have yet to figure out what actually is going on there. And that's probably the most interesting case that I've done so far.
Oh. Yeah, we've had a few interesting ones. We did a couple of private home investigations. The first one, I believed. Okay, I still believe on the first one. Really old house. The whole town of where this house sits has got some pretty dark history to it in and of itself. So, I mean, a lot of that explained what happened. And we did have a good experience. Some strange things happened. My wife was just taking pictures on her cell phone. This was before she got her camera. She was taking pictures on her cell phone of this shed. Now, the owners never went out to the shed, never opened up the shed, didn't want anything to do with this old creepy looking shed, right? And all of a sudden, she comes running in the house to the basement saying, look, you got to check this out. You got to check this out. And she got what looks to be like smoke coming from underneath the door of the shed. Oh, we went investigate and see if we could find out. Nothing was burning. Nobody was burning leaves. No grill was going in the immediate area. So we couldn't explain where the smoke came from. We opened up the shed, found out that at one time there was a fire inside there. You could see the charred wood all over the place, graffiti on the walls, probably some kids partying or something and started it on fire. You know, the glass was, you know, you can tell if glass has gotten into it, like a glass window has gotten into extreme heat. Okay. Mm-hmm. It gets that real brown, yellowish brown film all over it. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what this had on the back window. Okay. So it was definitely a fire inside of this shed at one time. The house is like 100 something years old, close to 100 years old when they bought it. We had some orbs going through my legs in the basement. I was setting up a meter up on a shelf in this little cubby area. And they caught orbs going through my legs. And we noticed this when we got back, you know. And it also explained why my one leg was in such bad shape for a couple of weeks. Yeah, I was feeling pretty pain. I mean, I knew I was I'm disabled, so I've got what's called chemo-induced neuropathy in my legs, so it's hard for me to walk. So I knew being in this old house, walking up and down a bunch of stairs, I was going to be in pain for a couple of days, but it was a couple of weeks. Okay. They were like floating through my legs, you know, and there was no breeze down there, so there was no reason for anything to be kicking up any dust. I mean, it was pretty clean, so there wasn't like there was like inches and inches of dust. It looked like, you know, the place was pretty clean. And no insects that could be seen, you know. So we couldn't explain that. But we had a lot of weird things happen, but they got our attention because he would keep telling me, I went to the bathroom and I come back out and, you know, I made sure the light was off and stuff. I'm in the And drawers in the kitchen and stuff would be wide open, you know, or the stove would be open. He'd go back to the bathroom and the light would be back on. And he'd hear people walking upstairs, but nobody was in the house but him, you know, because his girlfriend was at work. So, yeah, at first he started blaming her because he thought she was fucking with him, you know. But, no. Well, they had just bought the house, you know, they hadn't owned it maybe a few months before they started contacting us to tell us about it. We went out there and did an investigation. I think Chris has been there too and did an investigation at that house as well with his team. But yeah, it's a pretty active house, but then it's also a pretty active town. There's a strange history to that town. I couldn't find much. I couldn't find out why, where. There's no documentation of the fire department being formed, which is unusual in any kind of town's history. Okay. But there was a fire at one time, and it pretty much destroyed the whole town. And there was a flour mill there. And the flour mill had a couple of deaths in it, stuff like that. Today, it's an arts mill. All right. And we got permission to go in there, investigate it. And this is where I learned one of my first lessons. But I have a body camera with you at all times. We got body cams after this thing. Tom and I were walking down the hallway to go outside and have a smoke. And you got the three lights. They're all hooked up to the same outlet, one switch, three lights. Flip the switch, all three lights come on. Right? That's how this works. Okay? One switch at one end of the hallway, same switch at the other end of the hallway. Doesn't matter which one you use, three lights come on all at once. Well, we were walking through the hallway. The lights weren't even on. Okay? We were just going out, have a smoke. And the middle light flickered at us when we got in front of it. It just started flickering. But the circuit was, you know, the lights were off to begin with. And nobody was anywhere near those two switches.
That's impressive.
Flip those switches, and we tested that theory too. Even if you did like flip those switches, all three lights kept coming on at the same time. So there was no way to get just that one center light to come on and flicker at us. We couldn't do it. We tried. But at least I was there when I learned that lesson about making sure I have a camera or body camera on me at all times going. At least I wasn't the only one there that saw that. You know, I mean, this guy wasn't part of our team. He was just there because they got us access to the building. Yeah. Got some connections. They do a comedy podcast, but it was, Chris was there with us that night. It was a very strange place. We had a little bit of activity, but it's got a lot of history. That whole town does, but you couldn't find a whole lot of history. Like, you couldn't, you'd dig so far, and then it was like there was no records. Hmm. You know, and it's just a little pissant town in called Grafton here in Wisconsin. Hmm. You know, and everything else I've looked at and tried to find history on, I've been able to do pretty good and go back pretty far. But yeah, I couldn't find nothing.
You said the whole town burned. I wonder if the records all burned in the fire then.
That's what I was thinking too. But then, you know, when we were doing this, COVID was also just starting to run rampant when we did this, or just after we did the investigation started. So obviously we couldn't get into their, state historical building or whatever, you know, their little historical society building or whatever, you know, some towns might have, see if we could find old records, maybe on fiche or microfiche or whatever, you know, just ain't gonna find things on computer.
Mm-hmm. You know, computers only get you so far with what people have put on. Then you got to go dig in the physical records, and that's fun though. Yeah.
And I couldn't get there. I'm used to it because I did a lot of research in Madison on other things when I was growing up. So I know how to do that kind of research. Man, I couldn't figure some things out. There was like no record of the fire department being formed or why, you know. But there's record of the fire. There's record of the flour mill. There's record that, you know, of deaths. But I couldn't find... You know, but it's this whole town's got some dark history.
Heard of Grafton. I can't tell you if I've ever been there or not, though, but I'm aware of it.
Yeah, it's right on the Milwaukee River.
We were talking about, you know, the most interesting place or whatever that I've been. We had a lot of interesting stuff happen down in Burlington as well, in the haunted Burlington woods there. That was where we first started doing investigations as a team, like I said. And we've had Bigfoot activity there. We've had paranormal activity there. We've had, like, fairies and stuff there. We actually got to go on a tour with Mary Sutherland in there. She does the haunted wood tours down there, and she wrote a book called Haunted Burlington. So it was kind of cool that she came our first show, and we got to hang out with her and stuff for that. But we had a lot of stuff down there that we couldn't explain.
Yeah. So, you know, that I don't see why some people don't believe in all of that stuff if they believe in the paranormal. You know, I believe you should have an open mind if you're going to believe in the paranormal, or at least investigate. But to say aliens are possible and all this other stuff is possible, why not fairies? Why not goblins? Mm-hmm. Why not gnomes, you know, or leprechauns even, you know, for all that matter, you know? Mm-hmm. I've got
a lot of that stuff has folklore and stuff going way back.
And it's got to be based on some kind of truth, you would think. And I got a saying that I like to use on this show a lot, and it's like, anything's possible. You know, I mean, I've been out to the Devil's Punch Bowl because of the gnomes and the fairies, you know.
Yep, we were out there too.
Yeah, it's a very interesting place. I was a little upset. Because when we got down in there, I saw that some graffiti artist had tagged the place. And I don't, I think that's just, you know, I mean, you know, if you don't find anything paranormal down there, it sure is a really cool, interesting, beautiful, scenic type little gem just hidden away in Wisconsin, you know. And it's always interesting to go there. You never know what you might see.
I was really surprised with how small it was. Like, I was picturing it being more of a, like, national park or something, you know, where it was bigger. But, yeah, that was the only thing that I found interesting about it. But it's really pretty, like you said. It's cool to go down in there.
Yeah, you got to be careful on the walk, though. That's the only thing. You want to be careful because it is – they have that one fence that was kind of like walk path on the top. But the ground was eroding, and if you slipped, you could go under the fence and down, you know, and you didn't want, you don't want to fall through that ravine. So you've got to be real careful when walking around anywhere in the wild anyways, but especially around that Devil's Punch Bowl area, because it is, you know, kind of deteriorating due to weather, you know, natural causes, I guess would be the best word. Yeah.
And make sure you let somebody know where you're going.
Right.
You don't want to go out, you know, in these places and stuff in the woods or anywhere if you don't have somebody.
Especially nowadays. I used to be, I'd never be afraid to walk around at Madison after midnight. You know, before I moved out of Madison about 6 or 7 years ago, you wouldn't have caught me out on the streets after midnight, walking just across the street from where I live to the Walgreens or something. You know, I wouldn't do that. You know, I'd get in my car just to go a block instead of walking because, you know, I didn't feel safe in Madison anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just, like I said at the beginning of the show, we went down to Chicago to investigate the Mothman stuff, and we were down there at night downtown Chicago, you know, and, you know, looking up at the sky and saw a lot of interesting things. And all of a sudden you hear this, like, sounded like a gunshot. And my other investigator, Derek, looks at me and he goes, "What was that?" And I said, "It was a gunshot." And he goes, "No, you're kidding." All of a sudden you hear the police sirens and the ambulance go. And I'm like, "That was a gunshot." A little while later, you hear another one and all the ambulances and the cops go the other way. He couldn't believe that. I said, "Yep, that's Chicago right there." So,
and I tell you, I was driving my friend's car. He lost his license, so I was driving him down to his dad. Yep, work and live in Chicago. And we get down there, and this was like 1985. I was still a senior in high school, so it was about 84, 85, somewhere in there. And we get down there, and we're kind of at a stop-and-go light, and all of a sudden, this car just comes racing through the red light on the other side of the, you know, opposite of us, and kind of turns into a parking lot and rams a guy right into the brick wall. And then they get out and start running. It was like it was an intentional, like, hit and run without the gun, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they meant to do that. It was like, just plowed the guy right into the wall, and it's like, that. We're keep going. I'm not sticking around this area. I don't want to come back to Chicago either.
You know? Well, I mean, you, like, can't terrified. Even... You can't even say that Chicago's gone downhill because, I mean, if you look at the history of Chicago, it is all mafia and you know, all that back in the day, Al Capone and everything down there. So there was always, you know, mob violence and shootings. And stuff.
Here too, but not as bad. That's for
the
sure.
The whole town's based on that.
And they got all these one-way streets. They go, obviously, they end up going the wrong direction you don't want to go. Like, wait, I want to turn this way, but all these streets are going this way, one way, you know. I didn't like it. And I had to drive for a living, so I had to go to O'Hare a lot when I drove cab. Or Cicero was the other one I had to go to. And I didn't like either one of going to either one of them. O'Hare was a pain in the ass. I never saw anything while I was driving cab down there, though.
No.
And I quit driving cab in 2001. It was. Then I wasn't into the paranormal stuff like a.m. today, you know. Like I said, we started in 2019, and it's just taken off like wildfire, and COVID was kind of a blessing in disguise. We started doing this, the talk show, when it got colder. I can't handle the cold. I don't go out and investigate the cold. We didn't get out as much this year. We went to Iowa. This year, we went to the Buddy Holly crash site. And for our school, there was an interesting place. Oh, God. We got invited by Dale Kaczmarek from Illinois. And, man, it was an honor to be at the Buddy Holly crash site to see it. I've been, you know, I'm a fan of music. So, you know, the day the music died, you know, that was on my bucket list for years before I even started doing this. But we started playing some music, and we had an EVP session going, and it's like, and he had this really nice thing. I wish Mark was around. He'd tell you what it was called. He'd remember. But it was hooked into his laptop. It had a speaker. And if they answered, it'd come through there, and we could hear it right away. Okay. And he'd ask these questions like, who's playing this song? And they'd say, you know, Buddy, or we got Bopper, you know, or Richie, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was just amazing. But when we used that same equipment at that school, we were in this boiler room, and oh my God, the activity that was going on in there. There was a lot of angry voices that we heard. And then there was like, I bet there was at least 20 different voices, 20 different people talking to us all at once, you know, trying to come through. It was very active in that room. You know, I actually, when I first got there, I was in the building for about 5 minutes, and I got really sick, and I had to bail out of the building. And the minute I stepped foot out of the building, I started feeling better. So I said, so I waited a little bit, you know, went back and realized, okay, you know, I'm not going to let this bother me again. And it didn't, but, you know, it was just, it was something that's never happened to me like that before. I mean, I've got problems because of leukemia. You know, I had AML leukemia, and it killed me. I died 4 times, had an out-of-body experience, all that crap. And that's why I believe stuff that I believe in is because of what happened to me personally. You know, I was diagnosed December 4th, 1995, and they told me I wasn't going to live to see Christmas that year. Goes to show you what a bunch of quacks my doctors were. No. You got to have a sense of humor. I'm sorry. You got to have a sense of humor. If you don't, you ain't going to survive the shit I survived. You know, you got to have a sense of humor about life sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's filled me full of fucking bullshit. But I tell you what, I was there. I thought I had pneumonia real bad. And I started passing out every time I stood up. And by the time they got me to the hospital, they basically said there's nothing they can do. My white blood cell count was too high. If they started chemotherapy right away, it would kill me. I basically flatlined several times for I don't know how many minutes right offhand. I used to know all this by heart because I have the reports, copies of them. But the longest time I do remember where I was like above myself in a way. I could see and hear everything that was happening and, you know, clear, you know, and they'd hit the paddles clear, you know, and all of that. But I also heard them out in the waiting room area when my mom, she had heart issues. So when she heard the news that I flatlined and, you know, the cold flu took place, she started having problems and they had a sedator. And then I could hear, and then I heard my brother and my dad and my stepfather standing there next to me talking. I heard every word they said. you know. And it was so real. And ever since then, I've had, I don't know how to explain it, but ever since then, I could tell if something bad's going to happen to somebody before it happens. And usually I can narrow it down to three people now, you know. And then I also have very distinctive dreams where I talk to people that have passed away, you know, and I can remember everything when I wake up. You know, it was like it was real.
You know, so why do you think that you can do that now?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I mean, I do know this much is true, that when you're that close to death and you're knocking on death's door, you do tend to reevaluate your life. Okay. And start rethinking things. You know, mm-hmm. I was the type of person that dwelled on the past. You know, I mean, I really did for a long time. I came to the conclusion the reason a lot of those relationships didn't work out, I was only there to help them, like an angel. You know, they needed me, and then when they didn't need me anymore, they moved on. You know, now I'm at that point where I got my reward in life. I've got a wife, you know, I've got my own house, you know, basically, you know, but apparently they're not done with me yet, you know, whatever. You know, I keep telling people I'm a vampire. I'm going to live fucking ever. Why not? I mean, it's a joke. I've got a lot of these jokes. You know, my mom, you can sit there. My mom was a fun person. She never drove. So I had a chauffeur around. I drove cabs. So I had an easy schedule. I could drive her around anytime she wanted. One day, just out of the blue, she turns around and looks at me and she's like, "You know, you look like kind of like Charles Manson." Thanks a lot, Mom. Not the first time I've been told something like that. Okay? So, I play with things like that. I tend to, you know, I had to have a sense of humor, and it just got a little bit more warped when I was fighting leukemia. And so, you know, I spent most of my life before the leukemia as a security officer and private investigator. So I was working a lot of third shifts. Okay, so I'd go to bed by the time the sun was coming up, and by the time it was going down, I'd be waking up. Okay, I eat my meat almost raw, you know. So my brother started calling me that. And then I ended up with a blood cancer of all things. And I, so why not play with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just figured they're not done with me after all the shit I've been through. I'm not done yet. I'm going to live for fucking ever. I'm a vampire. That's what I keep telling people. Why not? Anything's possible.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your guys' next big adventure? I mean, we know where we can find you. Wisconsin Caps. Nope. Oh, I missed the W in there. Oh, well, they get the picture. WisconsinCaps.com.
Yep. Yeah, we do a bi-monthly YouTube show. And next year, we're doing an entire season called Road Trip. And we finally got back on the road this year with all the conventions and everything. So we're actually all over the country with the next season that'll be out next year.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yeah, we're... Yep. Our first two episodes, I believe, are going to be down in Chicago for the Mothman stuff. Mm-hmm. And we actually just finished filming that. We went to Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and we were going to go to the Mothman Festival, but that got canceled. So we just went to the town and kind of looked around, and we did some filming there for the episode. We have a guest star on our next episode. Our next season, we actually go Bigfoot hunting with the Turtle Man from Animal Planet. Uh-huh. And that was a lot of fun. He took us out and then showed us some of the evidence that's down in his neck of the woods, down in Kentucky, Tennessee area and that. And we get to investigate a haunted coal mine down in Kentucky as well. And that was pretty cool. And the season also... Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we went out there, and we went out with one of the teams that was there that took us out, and we did a couple different locations and investigate out there with them. So, and that was really cool too. So that's our next. Oh, and the Grand Opera House in Oshkosh is part of the next season as well.
Oh, cool.
So that's all coming out next year between January and December. So you got a while to wait for it, but it's definitely some cool stuff. And then our next episode is coming out in December, and that'll be our work from Mountain, Wisconsin area. And that's Bigfoot and stuff up there. So, and then next year we're doing the paranormal tours again at the Bean Snappers, the Gaynor Tavern. And we have the Hide and Adventure in Upper Michigan for Bigfoot that we'll be doing some tours and stuff at as well for the public. Definitely. Yep. And for anybody really interested in what's going on up at Hayden, we do a spinoff show on our YouTube called Finding Hayden. And that goes into detail. They're shorter episodes, but you get a lot more in depth of what we were working on up there all last year. And then this year as well with our investigations and stuff. And so, and then of course we're going to be at conventions too.
I need Hayden. I said finding hiding. That's kind of like finding Jay, right?
Yep, kinda. Yep.
Oh, Craig, that Bigfoot guy that spends a lot of time in Kettle Moraine area down there.
Down Jay Bachochin.
Yeah, I can never get his last name right, but yeah, he's on our show. We haven't found time to go out with him yet, but that's on our list too.
Yep. Yep, yep.
I'd really like to see that van one of these days. It sounds interesting as all hell.
Yeah, it is. It's grounded right now because the gas is so expensive. It literally cost me $100 to drive up to Rhinelander and back last weekend. So it's in the doghouse right now. I got to take my Equinox because that runs on E85 gas.
Then we got a car like that runs on that gas. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't get as good a gas mileage, but at least it's a lot cheaper. So.
Yeah, it is a lot. All right. Well, let's see. What do we got here next? Organized here. Tuesday is the start of November. Mm-hmm. Everybody have a safe and happy Halloween this Sunday. And on Tuesday, we will have Jake Fife as our guest. Whether or not we have Mark back is going to be another story. He's kind of on the road for a while. So maybe we'll have another guest co-host, see what happens. But Jake Fife and then Ben Stevenson on Wednesday, and that's only because he was scheduled a long time ago before we changed to Tuesdays and Fridays. So Tuesday and Wednesday and Friday next week will be live. Stay safe and remember, anything's possible. And thank you, Barnaby, for coming out.
Yeah, not a problem, man. Thanks for having me.
It was great fun and great hearing about everything and those stories. You come back anytime you got something new to talk about or just want to come back and chat. We're always here.
Sounds good. I'll keep it in mind, man.
All right, I'm going to end this.